This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show. Welcome, Paul Oliver, once again.
Good morning. Happy, happy, happy to be here.
Oh, sweet. I'm so happy you're here. We've got so much to talk about. It's not only gardening season, but is it ever bird season? And I know, well, birds and just, you know, urban wildlife in general, which you are an absolute expert at. So I'm so happy you're here to share some expertise.
I'm happy to be here and answer any and all questions about birding.
Excellent. Well, you know what? Then why don't you just give the phone numbers and the people will start calling, because remember, it's call early, call often, but one question per caller.
Yeah, so our phone number in Toronto is 416-360-0740, and outside of the Toronto area, toll-free 1-866-740-4740.
Wow, you do that better than Dean. I think he might have – he's lost his job. We'll just – have you come in every time? And so I would like to mention as well that, of course, that the big line, the outside the GTA phone number, goes right across Ontario. So again, a special welcome to our newest listeners and friends and probably wildlife advocates as well who are listening in the Owen Sound and Grey Bruce area. We have a new station up there. I don't know if you knew that, Paul, but it's 92.3 FM Zoomer Radio.
And welcome to those listeners.
Exactly. So we're happy, happy to hear from everybody on what's going on. I tell you, I've got a long list of questions because birds are certainly happening at my house. And I've been in Toronto the last couple of mornings. And yesterday morning, Elliot and I had to be somewhere very early. So we had the alarm set for 5 a.m. anyway. But starting about 3 a.m., one robin in one spruce tree right across the street started singing. And that robin did not shut up from 3 a.m. on. And Elliot's like, I woke up at 3 and I couldn't go back to sleep.
Probably a brother of the robin that was outside my window this morning going about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. And, so I go, why? The robins get up earlier than everybody else, I guess. And it's the old early bird gets the worm kind of thing.
Exactly. And they're collecting their food and they're looking for their mates.
All at the same time. Showing off their colors and their beautiful voices. Something to put on your calendar for anybody who would like to learn more and gain more bulbs. The Toronto Bulb Society is meeting tomorrow. Toronto Botanical Gardens, 777 Lawrence Avenue East, 1:30 p.m. in Studio 1. And that is Dugald Cameron, who is a very, very clever man. He will be presenting. His subject is climbers. So climbers with Dugald Cameron at the Toronto Botanical Gardens tomorrow, 1:30 p.m. Okay, well, look at that. We have a caller on the line. Let's go to our caller. Yes, indeedy, let's go. Good morning, Nancy, calling in from Burlington.
Oh, hi, Charlie. Thanks for taking my call. I overwintered my cantaloupe bulbs, and I want to pot them up. Should I be doing anything special?
Will they be going in the garden eventually or staying in pots?
In the garden.
Right.
No, I'm sorry. They'll be staying in pots.
Okay, so do you have some big pots that they were in last year, for example, that they'll be going back into this year?
Yes.
Right. So what I do, Ken, is usually have you checked them? Are they starting to grow in your indoor storage?
I took them out of the box and they're lying ready to be planted.
Right. And
But I didn't think I would be putting them in the big box first. I thought I would be putting them in pots first.
Right, because we still have chance of frost. So we don't want to put them outside yet. If you have pots big enough, because cannas tend to be quite large.
They're huge.
Yeah. So sometimes in the fall, I'll sever them, though you could do it now with a sharp blade. You can cut them into more manageable chunks and get them potted up just on the surface of the soil. Remember, the little growing tips will just be poking up out of that top of the soil that you've put into pots, and this would still be in your house, like in a controlled environment. Bright light, though. You need to get them right into southern window, patio, doors, something nice and bright, or under lights if you are going to pot them up, because you're going to water once anyway, and they will start to grow. So they need that light.
What about the roots on them? Should they be trimmed back?
Only if they're really, really long and tangly. If they're, you know, a couple inches long, I leave them alone. You'll know they'll be fleshy. They'll have life in them. Leave them alone unless, like I said, they're foot long, then, you know, sever them. But if they're black and shriveled or smell in any way moldy, then definitely cut those off as well.
Okay.
All right.
I guess I'm ready to go to the next step.
There you go. And it's a beautiful day to be doing something like that, because I think it's kind of raining all over Ontario today.
Well, it's time we got out the garden anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Things are popping. Things are happening out there. Thanks, Nancy.
Okay, thank you. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Things are happening in the garden. What's happening? You have two gardens, Paul, right? You have an urban garden here in Toronto, plus you have a country place.
Yes. Yeah, so my brother does most of the gardening at the farm, I get to go and enjoy it after he's done most of the work.
Ooh, lucky
and
you.
Provide opinions.
Of course. No judgment here.
And in Toronto, we're just getting things cleaned up and ready to roll, and getting the big pots out, because a lot of it is potting or potted gardens. And
Because you've probably got big trees. It's
yes.
An older part of Toronto.
Yeah.
Not a lot of soil to dig in.
No, those roots of the maple trees are pretty invasive.
Yeah. So you have a much better, well, that's what we love about, you know, container gardening is,
oh, yeah.
It's like a controlled environment. You choose the soil, you choose the plants, you water, you fertilize, you make them all. So what do you grow mostly? Is it more like ornamental stuff or some edibles?
Ornamental.
Yeah.
Yeah. The squirrels are too pervasive if we try to grow any food sources.
Really? Would they pull up carrots, do you think? You never know.
They'll dig up just to think, just to see what is there.
I know, and then throw it over their shoulder if they don't like it.
Yeah. Or a nice tomato, and they'll take one bite out of it and say, they don't like that one.
Yeah, move on to the next one. It might be different. Take a bite. Man. So I wanted to thank you again, because you have given and brought some lovely gifts in when you've been here on the show. And the last time you were here, you brought some of the sunflower seeds that have no shells. So what do we call that? Sunflower hearts.
Yes, sunflower hearts. It's actually our most popular seed. All the birds love it. And most importantly, you don't get anything falling to the ground.
Exactly. There's no mess left behind. It all gets eaten. But it's so popular that it becomes a bit of an issue. I mean, you could end up with another mortgage if you were, you know, only feeding this the hearts.
Yes. But the birds love it because it also avoids them digging through and saying, I like this, I don't like that. It doesn't have any fillers in it, so they eat 100% of it. Mm. What I actually find with it is about 10 pounds of sunflower hearts is about 30 pounds of black oil.
Yeah, really?
In the amount that they actually eat, because you're taking about 10 pounds or 15 pounds of shells off the ground that have been tossed down. And
you do want to do something with those shells. Now, you actually pick them up? No, I just rake them.
Rake them out. If they get too concentrated, they'll actually
kill the grass.
Kill the grass.
Yeah.
So you want to keep the feeder clean, or under the feeder clean. It also eliminates having rodents or anything like that, is if you keep it clean under the bird feeder. And that's one of the reasons that so many people like the sunflower hearts is because you don't have to do the cleanup. It just keeps it clean, and there's no attractant for squirrels or rodents or anything.
Right, or raccoons.
Or raccoons.
Yes, yes. Okay, so we'll go for our first break, but when we come back, I'm going to tell you about the feeder that works so well for me with those sunflower hearts.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right. I did leave you hanging just mentioning a bird feeder that has worked so well at my place, because I've got, and I think we're going to want to talk about this later, but, you know, the grackles, the red-winged blackbirds, they are just, you know, wreaking havoc on all the bird feeders. But I have one little cylinder feeder that's encased with a cage. and the cage, the bars of the cage only allow small, you know, finches, chickadees, juncos, they can get through into that feeder. So that's where I've been putting my sunflower hearts. And it's emptying very steadily every day.
Oh, yeah. The little guys love those because it protects them from the big predator birds or the more aggressive, bigger birds. The only challenge with that is something like a cardinal, which is a bit bigger, that would love to be at that that feeder. But a good platform feeder for a cardinal with safflower in it is excellent because it keeps the squirrels and the grackles at bay.
Right. And will red-winged blackbirds go for safflower?
They'll principally go for anything because they have the wider beak. They can actually eat the or open up the safflower, whereas the grackles with the long pointy beak,
they can't.
They can't, and they're pretty smart, and they quickly learn that there's better food elsewhere. And
we hope. We hope
and
they
go away.
Yeah, I hope.
You can always put up a nice little sign saying, go down the street, Mrs. Smith has
sunflower. Yeah, so that's main thing is try and avoid any access to sunflower seeds by the big birds for now in an effort to send them elsewhere. But safflower is good because the big birds generally don't eat it. Peanuts are good because generally they don't eat those either.
Yes. And it's really protecting it at this time of the year when the grackles are migratory. They're getting back. They're finding their feeder that they're going to use for the season. And if you make it inconvenient for them, they'll often move on.
Oh, and fingers then, crossed.
And then so with safflower, switching it out for to keep grackles away, you probably only need to do it about 48 or 72 hours and then switch back. The chickadees, the finches will still eat safflower during a short period. Cardinals love it year round.
What about doves, morning doves?
They'll eat it. Anything. They'll eat anything, and particularly if it's an open platform feeder. It's just a beautiful spot for them to nest or to
lie
their big bums down
and
there and
move.
Sit and gorge themselves.
For hour after hour after hour. I know. Nobody can get in there. Even the Blue Jays sit back when the doves are taking over the platform. And the Cardinals at my place, generally, they will come to the platform feeder, but it's a little more exposed, and they like to be very – they like shelter close by.
Well, the Cardinal, because – it's very shy, but it's because he's always there with his wife or his girlfriend. I'm not exactly sure which one it is, but he's always very protective because they mate for life, and he's always wants to be. He may be a bit bold himself, but he's protecting his spouse.
Always on, very alert,
and so even on. My Schoolbuster Plus, there's a cardinal ring. He loves to sit on that, but he'll sit there and two little noisy chickadees show up, half his size.
Yeah.
It'll scare him away.
Yeah, yeah. I put some chimes out, and I think that's scaring the cardinals a little bit. So, yeah, they get used to it eventually, but they were my last to come into my garden. And, you know, wild birds where I live, so they didn't even know what bird feeders were. That took about 6 months just to get one bird. And then, you know, 3 years later, the cardinals showed. So listen, let's go to our next caller. We have Noreen on the line. She is a first-time caller calling in from Toronto. Good morning, Noreen. Wait, not yet. Wait till she says hello. Paul's practicing. Can we get Noreen? Good morning, Noreen.
Good morning.
Before you say anything, Paul's poised to give you your garden wings. Do you hear that?
Yes, I do.
All right. Welcome to the show.
You.
Welcome to the show. You've got to turn down your radio.
Pardon?
Could turn down your radio.
Okay.
You've got to turn down your radio.
There we go. And I know it's a delayed
call
from the phone.
Yes.
It's nice to hear all the information about the birds for the garden, but my question is about the plants for now. I've removed a child's sandbox and play area that's in a shady area beside the garage, and it doesn't get any sun. And I was wondering how I can replenish the soil and then plant a garden about 2 feet out and 10 feet deep along the garage, and what plants I could put in there that would grow in shade.
Okay. And just before I ask you to hang up, the sand that came out of the sandbox, you can scatter that, so let's get that done. But are you looking for herbaceous plants that will grow up and be pretty in the summer, or are you looking for more trees and shrubs?
I'm looking just for summer ones and maybe one or two small shrubs that
okay.
would grow there permanently, okay. but perennials.
Sure. Okay. So tell you what, hang up the phone, grab a pencil and a piece of paper. I'll give you 20 seconds to do that, and then I'm going to give you a list of some suggested plants. So just anybody who wants to write this down, these would be shade tolerant. Nothing really loves the shade, but
no.
shade tolerant herbaceous plants. All right, so
okay.
I'm going to say goodbye, Noreen, and
Thank
you grab your pencil. You're very welcome. Thanks for calling, and don't be a stranger. Yeah, the sandbox question, I had that at my house when my kids grew out of the swing set. And again, pure shade. We often have the kids playing in shady locations when they're little. And you, there you are with this hard packed, in my case, or sandy area. And you know you want to make it different and make it pretty and use that space differently. And that's one of the transitions that happens in our gardens, right? We, as our families grow up or we move, things change and we have to change with it. It's a part of being the dynamic. That's what I love about gardening. It's never static, right? It's always changing. All right. So for Noreen, like I said, the sand can be scattered. Try to not have it, you know, a foot deep anywhere. I imagine it's not that much sand. Sandbox sand tends to be very, very fine, not very well drained. So yes, just get it out there. Get yourself some bags of composted manure. You're in Toronto. That would be your best. Or 100% compost. You need organic material. You're going to scatter that on this 2-foot by 10-foot area, making a shape of some kind, maybe using a hose as your shape builder, and then creating that garden bed. Lots of shade. Not a lot of evergreens are going to do really well. There is a dwarf balsam fir that will do quite well in low light, and it's a small evergreen, so it's there all the time. Super slow growing, not going to take over the space. Some herbaceous plants that'll be pretty during the growing season would include ferns. There's lots of great ferns out there, different colors, different shapes, different textures. Bleeding heart does very well. And again, there's pink bleeding heart. There's white bleeding heart. Hostas, again, lots of choices, lots of colors and leaf sizes and shapes. Something called Brunnera. So Brunnera, B-R-U-N-N-E-R-A, is a wonderful plant in a shady location. Looks like forget-me-nots when the blooms come out in the spring and lovely variegated leaves. Bergenia, pink flowers in the spring, shiny green leaves year-round. Hellebores, love a hellebore. They're all blooming right now, also known as Lenten rose. Sweet, sweet plant in a shady location. Coral bells on the edges where you've got a little bit of sun and shade, dappled sunshade. Lots of gorgeous coral bells out there. Again, lots of different colored leaves. So when we are gardening in shade, remember, it's not about the flowers. Flowers are short-lived, very ephemeral. Leaves, it's about great leaves, great colors, great shapes, great textures. So there's some good choices to start with. Thank you for calling, Noreen. And I would like Paul, okay, we'll be back after this, but Paul has a secret code, which he's had in the past, which he shares with you, the listeners who are let in on the top secret code, to be able to get a very sweet surprise.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Charlie Dobbin and Paul Oliver are joining you today. Happy you're here.
Always happy to fly in and answer all the birding questions.
We were just laughing, saying, we got so much to talk about and time flies on this show, just like a bird. Tell me your website and tell me why everybody should go there right now.
So if you go to urbannaturestore.ca, mm-hmm. At the top there is a special secret code. Enter in the word mom in celebration of Mother's Day coming up, and you will get a $10 discount card.
Right. Email to you.
Email directly to you. You can use it online or you can use it in the store. And if you're coming into the store for Mother's Day, we've got lots of nature-inspired gifts, everything from earrings to birdhouses, artisan birdhouses, binoculars, everything like that. The only thing we don't have that some people buy for their moms is vacuum cleaners. We don't think that's a good gift.
Or walkers. Okay, and just so you know, if you do go to urbannaturestore.ca, which you should do, it's a banner across the top. There are two arrows, right, left arrows across the top. So when you first go to the store, you might see proudly Canadian owned and operated, which your store is, right, Paul?
Of course we are.
Because
yes.
You are Canadian and you are the owner.
Yep.
But if you wait, those banners will scroll through and one will come up that says, enter the secret code. And as you said, the secret code is only three letters this time around. And it is, does it matter, capitals or lower?
Nope. No. We'll take anything as long as it's about mom.
Mom. Because none of us would be here without our moms.
Exactly.
It's very, there's out there, the birds are doing their thing. There's a lot of mom birds.
There are a lot of mommies that are building their nests right now and get up the nesting material for them, get out.
Yeah, that's right. You brought that. It's wool, right?
Yeah, so you can put anything out, pet hairs or that. The one I put out is a natural wool from sheep. Mm-hmm. Keeps the smell of the sheep. The birds love that. Mm-hmm. And mommies love to use that nesting material to pad their nest or build their nests up for the springtime.
Bet you the squirrels love it too.
The squirrels will grab a little bit as well.
But they might not like the smell of lambs.
It's not. They're not as attracted to it as some of the more refined ones. Hmm. Just the one thing don't use to put out for the birds are the lint from your dryer.
Right, yeah.
It's always got a bit of chemicals on there, and you don't want the baby birds chewing on
or
that.
Breathing in some of the particles, the little dust particles or dust mites or whatever might be in there, right? Yeah, so you're selling bags of wool for just that. And it's super time of year.
Yeah.
And great gift for mom.
Yeah. And that with a nice little artisan birdhouse. But I like this time of the year because this is when you get to watch the birds doing their things.
Yeah,
and the one thing that moms always like to hear is what the wrens do. Because wrens, a lot of people will say, I had this little wren. He came, he built this house, but never used it.
Right.
The male wren actually has to build the house, decorate it,
right.
And he builds three of them, and then she gets to go pick the one that she really likes, and she'll use that one. It's sort of like one of those home and decorating shows on TV.
Right, with the big reveal. So she's the final arbiter of it all.
Exactly.
Wow, poor little male wren. That's a lot of nest building for only one to be used.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, let's go one to here we have a caller on the line. Her name is Kathy. She's calling in from Otterville. I love the name of Otterville. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning.
Where's Otterville?
Otterville is near Tilsonburg.
Oh, very, very nice. Welcome
south
to the show.
Near Tilsonburg.
Yeah. Nice part of Ontario for sure. I imagine. Is it raining there today too?
It's cold.
Yeah.
Not really raining, but went for the morning walk and it was pretty cold.
Snowing up in Thunder Bay. We're going to talk a bit about that, actually, Paul and I, this late spring we're having. But meanwhile, what's going on in your garden?
I had a fertilizer question. So I've tried a few different things, sheep manure, the local farm fertilizer store sold me 15, 15, 15. I've tried a mixture of things, but I have little wee annuals that I grow that I put out, and I just don't want to burn them. So I usually try to fertilize the beds now, and then later in May get out my little plants.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, so you're just wanting to really make those little annuals turn into big annuals really fast.
Right.
So you want
right.
you want like the big show. And so this is a sunny location, shady mix?
Fairly sunny, some shade, but where I plant the annuals, fairly sunny.
Okay. Because I am a huge proponent of good soil and healthy, living, full of organic matter soil, that's what I rely on for all my annual plants, whether it's tomatoes or petunias. Going into a good quality, high in organic matter soil means I don't do a lot of fertilizing.
Okay.
Any of the organic fertilizers, so then this would even include, say, the manure or the bone meal or the ashes out of your fireplace, those are all organic sources of essential elements for plant growth, but they slowly dissolve.
Okay.
So you get a slow feed over a long period. However, if your daughter's getting married in your garden in the first week of June, you want wow, really fast, and you want your flowers blooming and everything big and, you know, profusion, then I would go to the synthetic fertilizers. And probably the best known one is Miracle-Gro, and they've got the Blooms Plus and all these different names. I'd have to go to the, you know, their website to see what they're promoting this year. But the synthetic fertilizers, which is the blue powder mixed with water, follow the instructions, follow, you know, water the plants. You will see very rapid growth with the use of that. It's like, you know, plants on steroids when we give them the synthetics. Do not fertilize as often as they tell you. They'll tell you to do it like every 10 days. But if you do it every 2-3 weeks, and you're right, when the little tiny baby annuals go out, don't fertilize at all. Let their little roots get established. So if you want to get prepared for them coming, a little bone meal, like a little mix of composted manure and bone meal into your soil now will get the soil ready. They'll put in your little baby seedlings, give them a week or two to get established, and then start cranking your synthetics, and that'll really give you lots of color pretty quick.
Okay, and what about those cartons I see of hen manure?
Oh yeah, hen manure's great. Yeah. So again, it's a form of manure, but it's been composted, so there's no bad smell. Generally, chicken poo was not something we ever took out of the hen house into the garden right away. It was what we would call, it would burn the plants. It would be too high a level of ammonia. But all the stuff you're buying bagged or boxed has been composted and should not burn, used according to directions.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And with the hen manure, a lot of times people find that keeps some of the squirrels away from digging up as well. So it's may get some repellency from the
aroma.
Okay. Yes, I feed them quite regularly at my bird feeders.
Yes, don't we all? It's funny, it's squirrels. Like, I wonder if that. I always think squirrels are maybe afraid of animals. They don't know what they are. So they're smelling that manure and they don't know what it is. And they're like, whoa, stay away.
From animals or just smells that they're not familiar with. Right. Like plant skid works great to keep squirrels away because it's a smell that they're not used to.
Right.
And they're just frightened.
Right.
And there are lots of other places for them to forage. And so you just make one area.
Very specifically, no-go zone. And so we know even with manure, whether it's sheep manure or cattle manure, again, these are big animals. Squirrels are going to pick up on the smell of that. So there's going to be a little bit of a response. And I used to love those. In small bags, you used to be able to buy something called zoo poo.
Mm-hmm.
And zoo poo was from the zoo, and it was well composted. It looked like dark earth, but nothing like a little tiger poop on the garden to scare the squirrels, right? or elephant or anything like that. So, go for it. Do what you can to get that organic matter up, keep the squirrels down, and then do what you need to do to get the big profusion. Thanks,
okay,
Kathy.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling. And it looks like our next caller, Paul, is all for you. It is Mary calling in from Toronto. Good morning.
Oh, good morning to all of you.
Thank you.
I've called before. Paul, the reason I'm calling this time is, luckily, I've got all kinds of birds that I haven't seen before. And the ones that I'm wondering about is, I don't have a good bird book yet. They're all black. They're smaller than a finch. And also, there's another black one with a, it's not, I thought it was, not the chickadee, the other one
Junko?
That I used to have.
No.
Whatever. Anyways, a white head. It's about between a finch and a sparrow. But they seem to prefer feeding on the ground. Like, I've bought the sun hearts. This is my second year. And, of course, the birds love it, right?
Mm.
The blue jays aren't back. I have the cardinals.
Mm.
Thank you. But I don't know if I should continue, of course, try to get it down there before the squirrels take it all. And I'm looking at one terrible one right now. But anyhow, my nieces said there are birds that are ground feeders. So I'm wondering, the little ones, they now are going to the feeder. I guess they're going for the sun hearts before the cardinals get there. That's another question. But should I continue throwing out, you know, a big handful of seed on the ground?
Hmm.
I don't notice more birds feeding on the ground, but I want to keep them around as long as they want to stay.
Sure. Go ahead, Paul.
Most likely what you're seeing on the ground are one of the juncos.
Could be a junco. Yeah. One of them could be a junco, but there are two more I don't know.
Yeah, and at this time of the year, it's a little hard because the colors are a bit different between particularly the male and the female. Of the ones and males are getting much more brighter colors, and a lot of females are getting darker colors or less bright colors as they get ready for the mating season. Putting out seed on the ground is fine, particularly to feed some of the ground feeding birds. The other thing you can do is actually get a large platform feeder that is elevated a bit off the ground, and they'll go to that as well. If you want to avoid having the seed right on the ground, like 12 by 12 or 24 by 24 big mesh platform feeder, you can put it on a pole and they'll go to that. It's just that they like the open surface area that they can peck around in and
they
can
don't
walk around.
Perch to eat. They stand.
Yes.
Well, why are cardinals so, like early, a couple of months ago, why are cardinals so nasty when another bird, I mean, my feeder is a big one. Why are they so nasty if they see, and it's a little bird? Maybe that's why the sparrows didn't go for a long time. Why are they so nasty? I know they're territorial.
Yeah,
but
most cardinals probably I wouldn't classify as nasty. You'll see some that are aggressive.
Yes.
And that's
male and female.
Particular at this time of the year where the male is showing the female that he's a protector, he's aggressive, particular for young male cardinals where he's attracting his life mate, he'll show off. Mm. And same as guys do in bars at night. and cardinals will do that. Generally, once they're mated, they're a lot less aggressive. They're a lot more cautious. Mm. And you'll probably notice as the season progresses that they're less aggressive, less nasty, and more of a community-based bird once he finds his girlfriend.
Confidence.
Any more solutions to keeping the squirrels away? They're digging up everything. They still keep jumping to my feeder, even though they fall off.
A lot of people will use the safflower to keep squirrels away, particularly if they're feeding cardinals. Cardinals love safflower. Grackles don't like it. And squirrels get a very bitter taste from the shell. So when they bite into it, it's a bitter taste. So
oh,
they
safflower seeds.
Yeah. Safflower seeds. Yeah, it's grown.
Oh, I can buy them at my local health food store.
Or your local urban nature store.
They're probably cheaper at the urban nature store than at the health food.
Oh, I didn't know that. Do you have them bagged separately?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we sell them everything from, I think, 6-pound bags up to 50-pound bags, depending on how many cardinals you have squirrels.
It is the cardinal's favorite food.
Yes.
And
a good one.
Because I add extra black flour, sunflower. I add the sunflower hearts. It's a mixture. I'm almost like a chef.
Yeah. So one of the things also, if you're finding that the cardinal is being too aggressive, he may...
Oh, they've calmed down.
And it's often because he's just afraid himself. So he articulates it as aggression. And so putting out just a separate feeder, a platform feeder with just safflower in it for him and his partner may eliminate that problem, because the chickadees and the finches will go to the sunflower hearts and the cardinal will go to the safflower, and he'll have his own feeder. He can do whatever he wants with that. He'll feel confident enough to invite his girlfriend down to join him in it. And then the squirrels will leave it alone because they don't like the bitter taste of the safflower.
Yeah, good stuff. Thanks, Mary.
I have a finch feeder, so I'm not worried. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and your suggestion is good. I find that that's kind of worked for me. Rather than trying to make every feeder a gourmet lunch for every bird, I've really tried to identify certain feeders for certain birds so that you can really concentrate on them, and they've got their space and they get used to it. So we have to go for a quick break. But speaking of special birds, and migration is, you know, going to be part of what we need to talk about with the weather, is the soon to arrive hummingbirds and orioles. So I need the inside scoop from you on when to get those feeders out right after this.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And we are here standing by. I've got Paul Oliver in studio. He is an Urban Nature store owner, advocate of all nature, particularly urban, though you have some pretty good experience with the rural as well.
I do, yes.
And yeah, you do a fair amount of speaking for some of the hort societies and the naturalists out there.
Yeah, I speak to a lot of horticultural and gardening groups and focusing on the birding side of the gardening, what to do to attract the birds.
It's so funny how gardeners, it's not funny. I realized early in the game that once I became a gardener, I also became a meteorologist. Like the weather suddenly had such big impact in my life. And then before you know it, you're exactly right. Now we're into the other wildlife, whether it be the slugs and snails or the squirrels and birds. And then,
or the mason bees. Or
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Some of the native bees and providing habitat, right? Yes. Pollinators, mm-hmm. All of that. So yes, indeed, lots going on. But I allude, okay, let's do the phone numbers one more time, please, Paul.
So the Toronto phone number is 416-360-0740. And if you're out of Toronto, the toll-free is 1-866-740-4740.
All right. Now, I want to talk a bit about the migrating birds, the little sweeties that are coming from way down south, coming to us here in Ontario. But I see our next caller is thinking the same way. Mm-hmm. Sue is on the line. Good morning. Calling from Beamsville.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. What's going on at your place?
I'm waiting for the hummingbirds to come. I put one hummingbird feeder last year, and I had them for like a day or two, and then they all went away. So I wondered, what should I do?
Right.
Should I add more feeders, or what do I have to do in the garden?
What do you think, Paul? Like both to, because they're not yet. You haven't seen any hummingbirds yet, right?
No.
No, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so the hummingbirds will be arriving shortly because it's a cold spring or a long, long winter, I guess. They've been delayed a little bit. Normally, I suggest people have their hummingbird feeder up by about the third week of April. May need to empty it out every once in a while just until the hummers arrive.
Right.
But the tracking, the public tracking website says they're right on the border now. I hope they don't have any problems getting across the border this year.
Oh, gosh, yeah. They probably have to fill out forms, right? To register.
but have the feeder out. What I actually encourage people in the springtime is to make the feeder, put it out in the middle of the open area. Even put something bright on it, a plastic flower,
red,
bright ribbon.
Orange, pink.
Any bright color is what they're drawn to, but they find it by sight. So they go back to their normal spot that they fed at last year. They look for the feeder. If it's not there, then they look for a feeder in the area because this is the area where they want to re-energize and get their energy back. So put the feeder out. Once you get one guy going to it, put a second feeder out, probably about 5 to 8 feet away, because once one male goes to it, he won't allow any of the other boys there. He'll allow all the girls, but none of the boys. So putting it out there, making sure that the feed is fresh, it hasn't started to ferment. They'll avoid it if it's fermented. And then once they start feeding at it, you can actually move the feeder into the shady area so it's not out in the bright sun during the summer.
Which will slow down the fermentation if it's in the shade.
Exactly. Right. And relative to them coming back, sometimes they actually just get back and they feed for a couple of days and then they continue their migration further north.
Right.
And a lot of that is dictated by the weather. Mm. So if it's cool here, they'll stay around the southern Ontario area longer. And if it's really hot when they get back, they'll move further north. And then also depending if in August, if we get a cold period, 3 or 4 days, you'll often see them come back. They may then spend 4 or 5 weeks in southern Ontario getting ready for the migration. If it's a more moderate summer and we don't get the cold period till early September, then it's at that time they'll come back. They're great indicators of the weather out there.
Who needs the weather network when you've got hummingbirds, right?
Exactly. occasionally you'll get some that stay around for the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
That's why you want to make sure you get a second feeder out once one of the guys arrives, because he may be wanting to migrate a bit further on because he's the older guy. But the juveniles may stay around in the area a bit longer. So having it out there, but keeping the nectar fresh, keeping bright colors to attract them because it's by sight. What I actually also find is hanging the feeder a bit lower than what you do traditional feeders. So seed feeders, you can put at basically any height, and the cardinals and the chickadees will feed at. Hummingbirds are looking for a feeder that's more at chest height because they're used to feeding at shrubs and flowers. And so they're looking a bit lower, but they find it by bright colors. Right. And right now, we don't have a lot of bright colors in our backyard, so having something out there for the hummingbird, one or two brightly colored feeders.
Go buy those fake plastic flowers.
Or
even a pink flamingo, something like that, just for now.
Yeah, right? when I make that suggestion at the gardening groups I speak to, I get them all cringing, they all are going to rush out and get that fake flower at the dollar store.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? Get one or two and just put them out for now. Yeah, interesting. And you know what? I think the most for me, because I've had a hummingbird feeder for the last few years, and a number of hummingbirds come back every year and seem to hang out. But it has been in full sun. So we are very, what happens is the hummingbirds, they'll tell you when it's time, but you don't wait for them to tell you. You want to change when it's hot. You're changing that, like dumping what's in the feeder, washing it out thoroughly, fresh nectar into it every 3, 4, 5 days max. Yeah. As soon as you get to 5.5 days, the hummingbirds will come to the screen. They'll go, noop, 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 right in your face going, get me some fresh food. And like, oh no, honey, quick, change the feeder. The hummingbirds are complaining. And sure enough, you get it all cleaned up and put out fresh and they'll all come zinging back. So once they're established.
Yeah. And a couple of other things to help keep the hummingbirds or to encourage them to stay in your areas to make them feel safe. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that most people don't realize is they're a perching bird. So they spend about 85% of their time perching. So putting out a little hummingbird swing or just leaving a few branches on shrubs that are cleared of leaves but extend out, because their defense mechanism is 360 degree sight line. They see a predator and they can take off and they can fly 20 kilometers from a standing still. That's their defense. So they like to be out in the open, be able to watch their feeder. And so if you put a hummingbird swing 4 or 5 feet away from the feeder, one of the older guys will actually probably take over the feeder and he'll go from his perch to his feeder and back and forth all day long. Aww. And you'll be able to watch them. Nice. And that's nice. But they'll also feel comfortable and safe and hang around a bit longer.
Nice. Okay, great tips. Thank you, Paul. And thanks for calling, Sue. Hope that's got you ready to go. You're going to fill that feeder, boil that water, get that sugar 4 to 1, right? 4 waters. To 1 sugar, white sugar.
And boiled, so it's dissolved, it's not a suspension, and no red dyes. You don't need any of that. Yeah. Just pure, clear water. The brightness is from the flowers that you get at the dollar store.
That's right, exactly. And then cool that nectar and get it out there today if you can. Thank you. Thanks, Sue.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, one thing I do as well, too, is I'll grow some annual flowers, annual red salvia, as an example, in the area of my hummingbird feeders. So then you've got that red happening. You know, you've got that, what do we call it? Like it's a harmony of bright to keep them in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I put in trumpet vines, too. Yeah. They love
trumpet vines, but I'm afraid to put in trumpet vines. Yeah. That'd be a bit of an invasive. When you say vines, you put in more than one?
It was actually put into block the view of the neighbor's garbage cans.
Oh, yeah. That happens, right? We have to do things because of our views. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we want the view. Sometimes we want to block the view. Love it. Thank you. We'll be right back right after this.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, here we are, Zoomer Radio with Paul Oliver in studio. A couple of callers on the line, Paul. Let's see what Sharon's got going on. She's calling from Melbourne. Good morning.
Good morning, Charlie. And I love it when you have Paul on. He has so much interesting information and advice about birds, so I just love to listen to him.
Nice. He's the best. Yes. What's going on at your place?
Well, I called about my amaryllis, but at first I wanted to say we've got something different eating under our feeders, eating the seeds that fall down. Mm. We have a rabbit that comes every day to eat some seeds. So that's different to watch out the window.
Until something else comes along. That's funny, rabbits.
Yes. And I was calling about my amaryllis. Mm-hmm. You had told us to put it away for a few weeks after it bloomed. And I did that and brought it out, and I had beautiful blooms on it. and now the blooms are gone, mm-hmm. and the stem has grown about another 4 inches, and there's these little round bulbs on top.
Mm,
are those seed bulbs?
Yes, seed pods. They are. If you want to spend the next 20 years growing new amaryllis from seed, you can. It will take many, many years before they'll ever flower. Mm-hmm. So generally what we do after the flowers are finished, we remove the dead petals, and then we have a green stem, a flower stem, which slowly shrivels up and turns yellow, and then we cut that away, just the flower stem, because green leaves are coming up out of the bulb, and we need the green leaves to grow and grow all spring and summer to fatten up the bulb for next year's flower.
So I should cut it off low on the, just, on the stem? It's not turning yellow yet. So.
Yeah, as long as it's green, don't cut it off. But I would cut off the seeds at the top because energy is going into producing those. And if you're not going to use them, then don't let the energy go there.
And when it starts to turn yellow, cut it off and let the new stems grow?
That's right. The new leaves will grow, and you'll grow them as houseplants or take them outside for the summer. Either way, you've got to let the amaryllis go through its natural cycle, which post-flowering is all about leaves.
Okay, and then as the winter gets here around Christmas time, put it back in the dark again?
Yeah, I put mine in the dark usually in late August, early September, to try and get it to bloom for Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Keep listening to the show. I'll let you know when it's time to put them away. For now, let's grow them.
Okay. Thank you. And it's good to hear you on there, Paul.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for saying that, Paul. Paul is a great guest. He's a great sponsor as well. And he brings great gifts. You should see what he brought: more of those little sunflower hearts and some of that wool for nest building. I can't wait to get home and get out my hummingbird feeders. Okay, we will go. Let's go to Lori. She is calling us from Georgetown. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning, Charlie. It's so nice to hear your voice. I listen to your program all the time, but I don't have a house anymore. I live in a condo, and I have this palm plant, and it's now 6 feet tall. Yeah. I have it for 10 years. I grew it from a baby. I changed the earth in the fall into a larger pot, and now I have those tiny flies keeping me company everywhere I go. They are tiny gnats. Do you know these?
So,
G-N-A-T-S?
Gnats. Okay, so they're little flying insects. Are they, look like a fruit fly? They're black?
Well, I think...
Clear wings.
They're just like a fly, grayish. Tiny gnats.
Okay.
And I'm just going crazy about them now. Like, I have them everywhere, but I have tried peroxide with water. I have tried slices of potatoes, they collect the eggs. And you should see when you pick up those slices of potatoes, they're just covered with those little.
All right, so Lori, we're going to run out of time here. So here's what you need to do. Palms, well, this is a house plant. So if you bang the side of the pot, a whole cloud of insects comes out of the pot. You know you've got something called fungus gnats. So G-N-A-T-S, fungus gnats. They eat fungus. You got to slow down your watering. Don't water as much. Don't let the soil stay so wet. Do not put potatoes or peroxide or anything into the soil. You do not want to grow fungus, and you do not want to kill the plant with peroxide. So lowering your watering will lower the fungus, and getting something called sticky sticks. Buy them at your local garden center, sticky sticks, S-T-I-C-K-S. Sticky little, like flypaper. Follow the instructions. All those gnats are going to get stuck into the flypaper, not being able to lay more eggs, eliminating your fungus gnats. It will take 6 weeks or thereabouts for this to all happen. But less water, sticky sticks, you'll be good to go. Thank you for your call. And like I said, we've got mere seconds here. So, Paul, one more time, remind people the secret code.
Secret code is MOM on urbannaturestore.ca.
MOM, M-O-M. And don't forget MOM, because Mother's Day is coming up. Thank you very, very much, Paul. It's always such a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And yes, we'll get you back, I'm sure. Owen, of course, couldn't do any of this without you. Thank you. And Dean, I hope you had a great day off. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.